Mother had a thought. One second, we think we're doing, we get in the stuff.
The next, we feel like we're the worst mom on the planet.
Which is why we need
the refreshing truth of the gospel
to be repeated over and over again.
Giving us hope and the everyday moments.
So, Mama, whether you're sippy cold gapping or doing a sink full of dishes,
we hope you'll find truth, encouragement, and laughter here.
This is the special 100th episode of the Risen Motherhood Podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Well, hi, and welcome back to the special 100th episode of Risen Motherhood, as you heard on the intro. Wasn't that adorable, Emily?
It was so fun, but it wasn't as adorable recording it. It was actually the voices of all of our children, Laura, myself, and then our other sister-in-law, Becca. So all of our kids had a little tiny sliver of a line they said in there. And it was quite fun getting that recording bit by bit.
Yeah, it was fun.
It really was fun.
And the kids are cute because they're very excited to be, quote, on the radio and hear their voices over the car Bluetooth. So it was just fun. It was really fun to be able to record that with them and to celebrate our 100th episode. Not only did we want to record a special intro, but we also have a very special new product for all of you guys.
Yes. In celebration, we are debuting an updated version of our Kids Abide card, which has always been a free downloadable tool that says read, observe, interpret, apply, which is kind of going through that inductive Bible study method with verbiage on the back at a kid's level. But we worked with a professional children's illustrator who did a wonderful job of just designing these beautiful updated cards that we know you guys are going to love.
I mean, they are so adorable. I love like when I print them out and frame them.
They have little woodland animals on them.
Yes. She just did such a wonderful job. And then on the back, this has instructions for you to be able to talk with your kids about how to study the Bible, what they're learning the Bible. It makes it really, really simple. And it's, again, the content is really the same as our old Kids Abide card, but it's just been updated so that I think it's more interesting for kids. Like our kids are super into it. They love seeing, you know, which one's their favorite and stuff. So it's really cute. And then on top of that, we have another special announcement.
Yes, something that we've been asked about for a while, and it is time. We are opening our blog for submissions. So the main reason behind this is just because with our theme this year, unity in the gospel, one thing we've been talking about a lot behind the scenes is wanting to get more stories from all different kinds of moms that have been through all different situations and are applying the gospel in their unique circumstances. And we know that you guys have wonderful stories to tell in light of the gospel, and we really want to hear them.
Yeah, and you don't have to be published before. You don't have to be an author. We are just looking for women who can tell their story and then apply like a broader gospel application. So what you've seen on our blog, if you want to try your hand at that, we would love to see a submission from you. Those open on May 23rd and it closes on May 29th. So you can start now and start working on your post so that whenever it is open, then you can submit that. There is a whole info website that you can see all the requirements and things that we're looking for just to help make your post get it kind of where it needs to be in order to go on the blog. So definitely check that out. That's at risenmotherhood.com/2018submissions.
Yes. So we are so excited to see those come in and then start posting those on the blog throughout the next year. And the final little housekeeping bit we wanted to mention is that just like last summer, the podcast is going to go on a break for the summer. And so there'll be more details about that to come. We will be back in September. We are already planning for our fall podcast calendar. We are so excited. But everything else is still going to be running. We'll still be doing social media and the blog and the website and all the free resources and everything there. So we'll definitely still be around. But
we have one more show next week still.
Yes,
so this isn't our final episode.
Right.
Is it just one more? I think it's just one more. Well, you'll be surprised. Watch social media. You'll see. Watch your podcast app. You'll find out. But we do have, a show or two left where you'll have more details and then summer break. And hopefully you guys get a little summer break too. So, okay. On to our questions.
Ask us anything. If you guys haven't, maybe you're a new listener, Both in the fall and in the spring, we've kind of started this little tradition of doing Ask Us Anything, because throughout the year, our Risen Motherhood inbox fills up with lots of great questions. And so this is just a wonderful time for us to just be a little bit more casual, get to know, for you guys to get to know us, for us to just interact in a different way. So we are answering questions today that came in on social media
and email
and email through the website.
However, we always get like hundreds of questions. So it's really the most upvoted ones, most frequently asked ones that we try to answer. Let's get going here without further ado. What are your favorite easy go-to meals, or do you meal plan, Emily?
Do I meal plan? Actually, today I meal planned. So
okay, on the regular.
Big claps for that. No, I really come and go in spurts. I mean, I think breakfast is usually kind of our big sit down family meal of the day when we kind of have a feast, and dinner is usually pretty low key at our house. In fact, we live next door to my parents, so we actually eat with family usually 2 to 3 dinners a week.
Sometimes she's here, I'm living with my parents.
Yeah, and then sometimes they come too.
We sound ridiculous.
I know. So it's just been really nice in this season of life. I try to have like a lot of things on hand that I can throw together for a dinner. So we typically go to things like baked salmon and then steamed vegetables and rolls that are in the freezer with rice in the rice cooker. I like to do a lot of one pan chicken dishes.
The one pot wonders. Those are my fave.
Yeah, where you just line the chicken up and then you put all the vegetables on the side and you just drizzle a bunch of oil, salt, pepper, everything over it. And it's just a meal really easy. So I keep a lot of that stuff around. That way, if there's no parents that are willing to take us in for dinner, I definitely have something on hand I can make in about 30 minutes.
So I'm the total opposite. I love to meal plan. I sit down on a Sunday and I meal plan. I use Google Calendar, call it old school, but my husband and now I do live with my parents. We're living temporarily with them. If, again, you're a new listener, we've moved to Iowa. We are actually currently building a house, which you might hear more about on the shows going forward, but we are living with my parents for quite some time. So I do most of the meals here while living with them. And so I do plan. Everybody can kind of know what we're eating. So I just sit down and put a meal in. I don't make a lot of things twice. I view them as mini creative art projects. And I love to kind of improvise and make food. So I don't have any great go-to meals for you guys. Maybe a couple that I'll put in the show notes. But in general, one of my best tips is that if my husband by chance says, honey, can you make this again? And he will make that request, like, I know you won't, so please try. I'll just set it as a recurring event on my calendar every 2 to 3 months. So then that meal pops up and I don't have to kind of worry about digging up or keeping a recipe book or anything like that. So it works really easy. And I do have a couple go-to meals that I will make when I have to bring meals to a friend, and they're very delicious, and I will list them in the show notes.
Nice. All right, next question. This is good. We've never talked about this before. Where did you go to college and what did you study?
This is an easy one. Yes, I went to Iowa State University in Central Iowa, and I studied journalism and mass communication with an emphasis in public relations.
Nice. And
it was as if you didn't know that answer, Emily.
I know, but it just always sounds just like so cool and professional.
Oh, it's so long. It's always like, can we just tighten that up a little?
So I graduated from Avila University, which is a small private school in Kansas City, with a bachelor's of science in special education, and then also got certified elementary education as well. So
see, I think that sounds really cool. Like certifications and stuff. What? That sounds cool. Okay. So leading into that, or from that, I suppose, what did you do before kids? Did you work outside the home?
Yes. So right out of college, I worked as a special education teacher in an elementary school for a very short period of time. I feel like I had like 12 jobs before that. I maybe did. So then for a while, I also worked as like a para educator, which was, I actually loved doing that because I got to be one-on-one with kids who were on IEPs and just really get to know that one child. I just absolutely adored that. And then I nannied in home for a family who had a child on the autism spectrum. And then I also worked in our family business here in Central Iowa.
Everyone's taking a turn with the family biz.
I know. It's funny. Actually, my oldest son was just asking me the other day. He's like, so what did you do before I was born? And I got to explain him. I sat at this desk. And
oh, funny.
He's been in the office many times. And so he got a hoot thinking of me answering the phones, doing all that good front desk stuff.
Cute.
What about you, Laura?
Yeah, so I worked pretty much one steady job. I think I worked at a small public relations agency in Minneapolis, and there's not a lot more to say, but I was account executive there and worked with all sorts of businesses, working on communication and stuff like that. That's why I really love the strategic side of Risen Motherhood. I think it kind of plays into the things that I studied in school. So anyway.
Yes. And Laura is really super good at business because she comes from a family of entrepreneurs.
Oh, thank you, Emily. We haven't gotten to that one question where it says, like, what do you love best about Laura and Emily? But maybe we should jump there. Or it was, what does Laura love best about Emily? And what does Emily love best about Laura? So
yes,
we can jump to that. But maybe it's not my entrepreneurial skills, Emily.
What do I love best? I literally thought multiple times, I'm like, I should sit down and write a speech.
Ooh.
But I didn't. In my
One
mind.
One of my love languages is words of affirmation. So I'm like, I really would have loved that.
What do I love best? I think it's just hard to describe because I think what I love best about you is what I love best about, like, our relationship is very unique to me in my life. Yeah. And it's very special to me. And I love that you do a really wonderful job of loving me and correcting me.
Ooh.
And I think you just are able to do that. You are just really the opposite personality of me, but I absolutely love it. And I think it's just really good. And I just love that you balance me out and you're not afraid to love me and affirm me and then in a nice way tell me I'm wrong or I'm missing something. But it's been so good because I've seen so much growth in my life, both personally and then also, you know, through Risen Motherhood, you could call it professionally and just in ministry because of who you are and what you bring out of me and the way you challenge me and just point me to Christ in really straightforward ways. And I need that. I need that little courageous push. I need somebody like next to me, like linking arms with a sword in their hand.
Oh yeah.
Because I'm kind of like looking around for the cushions to sit down on.
Well, and this is where it's so funny because you are in my brain for this because Emily and I don't know what each other are going to say. A lot of times on the show, we know kind of what the other person might say, but we did not discuss this one. And first of all, I can barely look her in the eyes. Like these are kind of always, she's batting her eyes at me right now. These are always kind of awkward conversations, but good. And I think that's the exact same thing that I was thinking about is that we're the exact opposite. Like we could not be more different. And I rarely are you always like attracted to that kind of a like such a difference in yourself, but I love that. And I think that that is the same for me is that you correct me and challenge me in areas that I need to be softer or I need to be kinder or I need to be more thoughtful. And you're always very strategic in just like communication and your words and the things that you say and how things are presented and not out of a way of love for other people and out of a way of just care for them. And I think that's something that I know that I have grown so much. And I appreciate just your, oh, hang on, let's think through that a little bit more. Let's, you know, let's go back to that. Let's really be thoughtful and intentional with this. And again, like, I think that's one of the strengths of Risen Motherhood is our two different personalities playing together and like tug and pull of our personalities a little bit. But just like you said, it's always in love. I feel like you can say pretty much anything to me and like I know your heart. And you always say it in love. It's like not like it's ever like, oh, that you know, sometimes it hurts sometimes. But I also know it's because you love me and you want my best for me and my family and you're looking out for my best interest. And that other people had asked us some questions that got upvoted a lot is like, how do you guys seem to have such a good sister-in-law relationship? And I think that that flows well into this is that Emily always looks out for my best, I feel like. She's always saying, hey, take a step back. What do you need? What? Because I can kind of tend to blaze trails. But I have the sword and I'm whipping it. I am out there in the battlefield. Find me a dragon, you know. But Emily is so good at just saying, like, what does your family need? What are your priorities of, like, calling me back to the cross, calling me back to the gospel, preaching it to me when I think sometimes I'm running around with, like, a blindfold on. So
I love you, Laura.
I love you.
Oh, those are all the warm fuzzies. And I feel like we could talk about that for hours.
Yes.
But, yeah,
we kind of did.
We did talk about it for a short hour. But to go bounce off of that, I'm jumping ahead to that question about, you know, sister-in-law relationships. I think what was interesting as we were processing through that question, and specifically it was, how did you guys cultivate just the depth of joy with your sister-in-laws in this friendship? We were like, there's no special sauce.
Right.
You know, I think God has been really gracious to us. One just practical thing I would note, we're all kind of in the same season of life.
Yep.
And
That's helpful.
I do think it removes some barriers in our ability to understand one another and communicate with each other.
We're talking about Becca here too.
Becca, now you're involved.
Yeah. We'll give you your affirmation and privately later.
And I honestly, you know, it just helps that we all love Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so the deepest, most important thing to all of us is the gospel and seeing ourselves as sisters in Christ first and foremost. And so I think when you have people in relationships working from that starting point and you all love each other, then you do normal things that Jesus followers do, like you forgive one another.
Yep.
And you let love cover a multitude of sins, and mm-hmm. you try to put their interests before your own. And when somebody's having a crabby bad day and you know they're just a little off at a family event, mm-hmm. That's not their heart, you know?
Well, and something that Em and I have gotten a lot better at, and we do this with Becca too, but it wasn't at the beginning, it wasn't this good. Like Emily, even it was like a couple weeks ago, we were actually recording the show mm-hmm. and you like stopped it and you were like, hey, is everything okay? Like, are we mm-hmm. good? Yeah. I was having an off day because of other reasons, but it was mm-hmm. kind of flowing in and she noticed it, stopped and talked about it and brought mm-hmm. it up. And that's something that I feel like with friendships mm-hmm. and with sister-in-laws, that's kind of one of those yeah. things where you want them to ask you about it, but you also kind of, you don't want to have to bring it up yourself. And mm-hmm. I think that's something that we've gotten better at too, is just like, hey, I'm noticing something's off. I'm going to point it out and bring it up and give her space to talk about it if she mm-hmm. wants to.
Yeah. So God's been really good in that, but I don't know that we have any special extra tips other yeah. than
forgive love. Each other. Yeah. It's not always perfect. Other. Like Emily and I have hurt each other's feelings. So like know that. We've had hard conversations mm-hmm. and it has been one of those things where I think we too also say, well, we're not getting rid of each other. So we best make this work.
All right. Moving on to a little bit about the book. So somebody asked, how has writing a book impacted your relationship and your feelings about the Risen Motherhood ministry?
This is a good one. I think this is funny because we're trying to answer the questions that you guys most upvoted or most frequently asked. And I feel like they're all about like kind of us and kind of how we're doing and stuff like that, which is really sweet of you guys. We really appreciate your care for us and thoughts for us. And I think that is like with the book, it has definitely been hard to kind of be myself, I guess, through the writing. I feel like I'm going to speak for Emily. We've had a lot mm-hmm. of conversations about this. And with our relationship, I guess, with one another, mm-hmm. like we have to be even more honest than we already were. And like we're talking yeah. a lot about, you know, us sharpening one another. And I think that's been just very true through the book to allow someone to look at your work, what you think is like your best, mm-hmm. and then Emily to come in and kind of be like, this, you know? And I know that it's good and it's coming from a yeah. good place, but it's just always hard to have critique, I think, of your work.
Mm-hmm. It's a very vulnerable place to be that, you know, Laura and I are the first person that sees each other's chapters, and it's our book collectively. And so it matters deeply that both of us love everything that's going on to those pages. But again, it's been a growth in a good way thing because I totally trust Laura.
Yeah.
And I totally know her heart. I know her heart is for reaching women with the gospel through yep. this book. That's my heart. And so whenever we share those things with each other, we're headed in the same direction. So it's been good for our relationship. But I think for the ministry, it's been good too, although it can also kind of get us in our heads too
yes.
much.
Mm-hmm. It's different than the podcast because it's written, the written word. And so you can kind of seem to mull over it more, mm-hmm. labor over it, never feels finished. And so there's just a lot of overwhelm or paralyzing mm-hmm. that paralyzation that goes on with
paralysis.
The book. Thank you. Okay. And so it's just been a lot about, hey, let's take this one step at a time, trust God to lead us. Trust that, you know, the words and the message that is in the book is going to reach, you know, all of you, and hopefully even more moms will be reached with this message who maybe have never heard the podcast, but have access to the book or maybe learn in a different way. And so it's really exciting, but I think it's just been kind of different than the podcast because you don't hear inflection and tone and the conversation. And that's been a really different thing for us.
Yeah. And I'm so excited for you guys to read it. Like,
yes. Oh my goodness.
I'm getting really excited because I feel like God has led us in like a little different direction than what we've shared. Like, we may cover a topic in the book that we've covered on the podcast, but he's grown us a lot since we recorded it, and we're coming at it in a different way. And so I'm really excited for you guys to just see some of the read some of the personal stories that are in there, and just I'm looking forward to the final product.
I'm looking forward to the final product too. Okay, so what are some of the challenging aspects for doing Risen Motherhood, and what's the one thing that you love the most about it?
Okay, so I think for me, one of the most challenging things, but for Laura too, is just walking a line with content. I think it is just, that has been a conversation from day one, particularly in the content that we share and endorse and put on our website and, you know, people we have right on the blog. I mean, all it goes on and on and on, because on one hand, Laura and I are like extremely passionate about sound doctrine, and we want to not lead anyone astray. We don't want to confuse anyone about what we think is most true and most helpful. But on the other hand, like, there are so many sisters in Christ doing amazing work, and we don't want to be these weird, nitpicky, you know, not gracious people, and not be gracious and see areas that we can have unity with others who are spreading the gospel in an amazing way. And so it's just always a really hard balance to strike, and it's one that we literally talk a lot about because we don't want to compromise, but we also don't want to be afraid of what other people think of us too if you know, we share something. And we also know we're fallible. I think that is that's one of the hardest things about the ministry.
That's the hardest thing, is that we know how easy it is to make mistakes, like for us, for other people, like we've seen it happen. And then for ourselves, we want to be a very charitable ministry. We want to be a very generous ministry, that abundance mentality that we never want to keep like fellow women or men that are doing great work down, or think that that's going to grow Risen Motherhood somehow. Like that is something that we're both big advocates of. That's why we have our resources page, because it's like,
we want to share.
This person said it better. Go listen to them, you know, or whatever. But that can just be a big struggle. So, but what we love is that ultimately the gospel never changes. So no matter all of these, you know, other resources, all this content that we share, all of that, like, we love the gospel, and we love that we get to talk about it every single day in all different ways through all different mediums. And that, like, this is what we think about. We get to create content around. We get to talk with one another about. It's just unbelievable that God would entrust us, who really are regular, everyday people, ask any of our friends, total sinners. Like,
totally normal.
Totally normal. And entrust us with his message in even in a very small way.
It is. It is such a joy. And I just think, like, how much I get like bored of doing other things, going back to my personality, but like, I just never get bored of thinking of ways to share the gospel. And I never get tired of this message. It just grows more beautiful, and it grows more passion, and it gets me more excited. And I think both Laura and I just absolutely adore laying down our time for the sake of God's gospel going forward to the ends of the earth in whatever little tiny way we can participate in it. It's just amazing.
And I love working with my sister-in-laws.
Woohoo!
I mean, I really mean that. And Autumn and Caitlin.
Oh, we have the best team. And Becca.
Yeah, sister-in-laws.
Oh, yeah, sister-in-laws.
That's okay. Okay, let's move on. So how do you foster close sibling relationships in your home? So this, we're moving into kind of some of the practical stuff that you guys have asked about. How do you hope to foster close sibling relationships in the future? And how do you teach patience and kindness in conflict with one another?
Just a quick reminder, Laura and I's oldest child between us is 5. So we can tell you what we've been doing.
Only so much.
But if you, you know, run into us like someday in public and our siblings or our kids are punching each other in the arm, we do not know the fruit of this yet.
We plead the fifth on these things.
So, okay, in terms of, I guess, answering to all of these things, I would just say, like, our kids spend a lot of time together. And so I think it provides a lot of opportunities for them to work out conflicts mm-hmm. in a way that we hope honors God and is based in the gospel. We expect our children to work through things and continue playing together.
And we expect, like, they're going to fight. Like, yes. We expect that. It's not like we're like, oh no, they're fighting. They don't love each other.
Right. Like that's fully expected, but it's also fully expected. We're going to
reconcile.
We're going to reconcile yeah. and we're going to move on. So one of the things we started doing, my husband and I actually started doing this when we first got married, is saying, I am sorry for a blank. Will you forgive me for a blank? And then the other person has to say, I forgive you for a blank. And then there has to be a hug. And so my husband and I started doing this, and all of our kids know this by heart. Like, I will literally hear them in the other room. You know, if somebody's like, whoop, you know, and they get hit and there's a scream. It's like, I'm sorry that I hit you. Will you forgive me for being you know, it's like, yeah. I can hear the speech. And so I don't know. I hope it's helping.
Yes. It's so good because I think yes. labeling things, having mm-hmm. kind of a phrase, a pattern to work through is huge. And mm-hmm. I think that's really, really important. We have our kids do that kind of same thing as well. And also I think something that we try to do is just with fostering sibling relationships is we talk a lot in our family about how much family matters. My parents would say to me a lot, your friends may come and go, but your family will last forever. And that's one of those things that has been helpful for me as like I process through seasons, and we moved a lot when we were little. And so it always felt like my friends were kind of going, and a high priority was definitely fostering sibling relationships and letting us know that like these relationships matter. God created the family unit. He gave us to one another. He chose us to be together in this family. And so we need to make it work. Kind of like what I said to Emily mm-hmm. of like, well, you're stuck with me. So let's have a good time together and let's learn to live together. Let's learn mm-hmm. to love one another. And our children, you know, their siblings are their neighbors. And so just like anything that the Bible mm-hmm. says about loving your neighbor, that applies. And that's something that you can teach your children when they speak and engage mm-hmm. with their siblings. Like all of those things apply.
Yeah. And one thing we talk a lot about too with our kids is just the fact that the people that are in their house, these are going to be the hardest people
yeah.
to show the love of Christ to. Mm-hmm. And so we always say, look, if you're not able to love your brother here, this is like a truer representation mm. of how you love more than even how you go treat your friend at school that you see for 30 minutes. And so a long time ago, we memorized 1 John 4:21 or 29, I can't remember which it is, but it says, and this is my commandment, whoever loves God must also love his brother. Mm. And we say that a lot whenever there's a conflict. I'll say, do you know, remember, like, you guys say you love God, like, we need to also love who? My brother, you know, and then they always like, you know, then there's a big forgiveness hug, and yeah. that's usually sometimes a choking hug, which turns into more need for forgiveness. But I think even bringing Bible verses into it yeah. can help remind them that this is really important to God.
Yep. Okay, another question. How do you meet the needs of your children, husband, and others while still finding time for yourself, especially your kiddos in the early years? This was upvoted, I think, the number one question. Mm. And this is something that we have answered before. We've done quite a few shows about this mm-hmm. topic, actually, which we'll link to in the show notes. So please go look there for kind of really focused shows. But clearly, you guys are wanting more. So if you're asking for how we meet the needs of everyone, I mean, the answer is we don't. Mm-hmm. We can't be all things to all people. Mm-hmm. But a couple things that practically I know we kind of both do, but I get up early. You know, now that my baby is out of a season of waking up a lot in the night, I get up early before my kids and really try to fit in some self-care at that time or get some work done and have my quiet time and things like that. And then also, we do have rest time. I know Emily has a rest time of mm-hmm. sorts. Neither of us have kids that nap every day, but we try to sync a time every single day where all of the kids are playing pretty individually or maybe as a small group, but they kind of know like, hey, this is time that you're not asking mommy questions. You're not coming to me with, you know, 15 requests for mm-hmm. drinks and to figure this out and to do that. Mm-hmm. But we set them up with some type of activity and they are told to, you know, you're going to play this for an hour and then the other babies nap. And ours time changes every day. It's not like a set schedule. It's whenever the baby naps, I'm like, okay, rest time, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's a very for us, it's a very fluid thing. Mm-hmm. It is a very kind of week by week, season by season thing. I've learned that for me, my husband wants to give me times of rest and times away, but he doesn't always know, like he can't read my mind. And so I've learned to advocate for myself a little bit, and not in a way of I deserve this, but just saying something. And we've worked together to brainstorm, okay, how can I get away? Maybe we look at our calendar in the next couple of weeks and we say, okay, here would be a good night if you want to go do something, or hey, can we get you off on a trip by yourself this in the next 6 months? Mm-hmm. Or can I, you know, I know one thing my husband does every day that gives me a break is in the morning when the very first bottle of the day he does. And it's like every morning I sit, lay there and think, I'm so thankful for this, you know, and it's just, it's a little thing. Or on Wednesday nights, I go to Bible study and he puts all five kids to bed on Wednesday nights. And it's not, you know, this life-changing thing, but it is in a small way, a little bit of time that I get to not have to do something. So I think look for practical things like that. But one thing I think is always good to say is just the reality is like, motherhood is hard.
Yes.
And especially in the season of little children, it is a time of pouring out and of laying down and of putting others' needs before your own, not to a martyr, you know, degree. But honestly, like that is the truth of the season that we're in.
Yeah, we heard a lot from you guys like, hey, motherhood's really hard. Should it be this hard? Like, is this really how motherhood's supposed to go? And like, without obviously knowing your unique situation and having a cup of coffee with you and really understanding what's going on, like the general answer I think is yes. Like Emily said, this is just a season where especially it's very physically demanding and exhausting. And so I think a lot of us are looking for time in the day where we can leisurely read a book or watch TV or just even feel caught up on the dishes or whatever, not feel like this endless cycle is going on. But that is what especially I think this young season of children is. Mm-hmm. But remember that the gospel gives you hope in every situation. And so no matter what is going on in your life, the gospel applies, the gospel matters, the resurrection changes what is happening in your day to day. And so you have not been forgotten. You have not been overlooked by God. He sees you. He sees your need. He sees the needs of all of those around you. And remember that because of Christ's resurrection, his death on the cross, and then his resurrection, like the work is done and you can rest. And that may right now just be a state of your heart, you know, and you may still need to continue meeting those needs, but you can rest knowing that like it is finished and that your salvation is secure, that you have an eternal perspective, and just know that you can cry out to God and he'll provide all that you need. And we do encourage you that if you're in that situation, go find someone to talk to in real life. And we just did a show on Mommy Mentors. That's not really what it's called. It has a better name. but about finding a discipler, finding a mentor. And we would really encourage you to do that. If you're feeling at the end of your rope, like go into your local church and find community there and look for other women to help you in this gig because it is hard.
Yep. A gospel life is a costly life. Ooh, but
that's a quotable.
But it is, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think that there is joy in obedience. And whenever I cry out to God and he provides what I need and helps me to persevere in his strength, there is like joy in that even if you're tired joy.
Well, God is strong where you are weak. And so motherhood puts us in that weak spot, right?
Yes.
Okay. This one is another one that you guys ask a lot. What does Sabbath and Sabbath rhythms look like for you and your family in this season of young children?
This is fun. This was asked so many times. I thought, maybe we need to rethink our Sabbath.
I know.
We need to get a rhythm.
Because there are a lot of ways to do Sabbath. But thankfully, we're
free in Christ.
Right. We're not under the law with Sabbath, but there are so many different ways to do it. So know that Emily and I's is just one example.
Yes, totally. And I think it also looks different for every family. In fact, Journey Women just had a really great podcast
on Abigail rest. Dodds.
Oh, she did so good.
So good.
So that would be like just a great another thing to listen to if you are kind of curious about this topic. But our family doesn't have any like formal rules or expectations or anything. We just view it as it's a church day. And it's we go to worship, we go to Sunday school, we usually have small group every other week. It's a time to be with family, so that may be a time when we eat out with family, we take all of our kids to a restaurant, or we may just eat leftovers at home. It's a day of rest in the sense of my husband has full permission to take a two-hour nap in the afternoon.
Woohoo!
I know.
That's really generous.
I know, it's so generous. And so we encourage the kids to rest. You know, I'm usually not on my phone much. Yeah. I'm not on social media a lot. I'm usually pretty unplugged. Obviously, there are exceptions to all these things. Yep. But as a general rule, like, I put on sweatpants at, like, 4 o'clock. And
like, 1 o'clock.
Yeah, as soon as you get after church. And we have, you know, my husband and I like to watch a show together on Sunday nights, kind of our routine.
Yep.
And so it's just, it's a relaxing day.
I would just ditto, Emily. I have really nothing to add. It's a little different, but generally it's the same type of thing. So the next question is, how do you handle discipline and any creative tips or tricks over the years? Please touch on disciplining toddlers and preschoolers from a biblical perspective.
Ooh, that's a whole show.
Yeah, we did a show. We actually did a show. It didn't have tons of practical because, again, Emily and I feel like, well, we just don't have a lot of proof in our pudding yet. But if you want to listen to episode 57, How Discipline Helps Us Communicate the Gospel, where we did share, you know, as much as we kind of could in a 20-minute show. But
and there's that said, resources on that page as
good
well.
Good ones. Yeah. So, Emily, why don't you talk through natural consequences? Emily and I do a lot of the same things, so we're going to we're gonna bounce back and forth.
We do. And I think, so this was more, this would be like more for 3 to 5-year-olds. It's a little bit on the older end. But one thing I really love about this season is that we're kind of out of like the nitty gritty of like obey, respond. Yep. We've trained that. And now there is a lot of here are the natural consequences of disobedience. And obeying mommy and daddy has more fruitfulness and more joy, and obeying God has more joy than what happens when you sin and you do not respond in obedience. And so one example of this, recently, my husband and I went through all of our kids' clothes and we pulled everything out. We had 5 bags of clothes that needed to be put away in the basement in trash bags. And my oldest son ran up and said, oh, the twins, so he said their names, it's raining. They're playing rain downstairs. Come quick.
Oh, no.
They're playing rain with the 5 bags of clothing by dropping them into the air. And we have clothes flying everywhere. And so the entire basement was covered in clothes. And so a natural consequence of that was they had to pick up every single shirt, shorts, everything, and put them all back in the bags. And it took a very long time. And it was very strenuous for them.
And probably for you to keep them on task.
Yes. Yeah, it was painful for me too. But, you know, at the end of that, we talked about, you know, was that like 30 seconds of fun really worth that hour and a half? Who were you thinking hour about? I don't know how long it was. It felt like an hour and a half. It may not have been. But, you know, was it really worth it? Like, who were you thinking about when you were tearing those clothes out? Were you thinking about you or were you thinking about mommy and daddy? You know, you see their eyes and they're really starting to calculate.
They're like, processing.
I guess I was only thinking about me. I wasn't thinking about the work that I had to do. So that's just one example of like lots of ways when we look for opportunities to say, in fact, my oldest son just recently said, Mommy, remember that time when I couldn't go to that birthday party because I disobeyed?
I remember that time.
That was so long ago. And he remembered that he doesn't remember what he did, but he remembered that he could not go to a party because we told him, you need to obey and do this or you're not going to the party. And so there are definitely great opportunities for teaching about the heart lessons and natural consequences.
And the words that you're hearing Emily say are the words that she really uses. Like, and same with me. Like, those are the kind, we use the word repent. We use the word reconcile. We use the word forgiveness. I mean, not every time, but it's just kind of getting them used to those biblical words. And like, I'm always an advocate of like, speak to your child at a level that's like a little bit higher than they are. They understand more than you think they are at. They understand more than you know. And even still, like you can say the word and then kind of explain it on their level, but getting them used to those words is really good. And another thing I would kind of add to kind of using this natural consequence method, I think it's really helpful in building trust in you as a parent from your children and you teaching appropriate responses to different things. Recently, for example, my son just like was running in the living room yelling she's so ugly or something like that. And he must have heard it at school or in a movie. I'm not even sure where he picked it up. He wasn't saying it to anyone in particular. He was just repeating a phrase that he had heard. And my head, of course, snaps to attention when he starts saying the word ugly. But instead of kind of being like, hey, don't say that. That's so mean, you know, or kind of freaking out on him, I just like walked over into him and was like, hey, bud, where'd you hear that? Why are you saying that? And I got down on his level and talked with him about it, of like, this is what the word ugly means. And that can be very hurtful for someone mm-hmm. if you say that. And so we wouldn't want to say that about a fellow image bearer or somebody else that God made, because that is not something that's kind to say. And so we talked through that. And I think it's something that helps our children feel free to be able to come to us, because they're not going to get freaked out about, they're not going to get yelled at, they're not going to, you know, like having a calm response to your child and being filled with grace. And even myself saying, like, sometimes I say things that aren't kind, and that's not something that's not a person that mommy wants to be. Those aren't things that I want to say. It's not mm-hmm. honoring to God. And showing our sin with our kids, I think that's one of the times where my son didn't have like a natural consequence mm-hmm. for saying that, but it did open the door for mm-hmm. us to be able to have kind of preventative instruction in a way. And it takes away the fear of him doing something wrong and then feeling like he can't come to me or talk with me about it. Or if he has questions about something that happened, I want him to always feel like he can come and my mom will talk with me and explain things.
Yeah. And I like what we're getting at too, is just saying that there is a deeper reason and a deeper principle for things we want mm-hmm. our kids to understand. That, you know, one thing we talk about is like running in church. And if I see my kids running, I pull them aside, and it's not just you disobeyed mommy, that may be part of it, but it's also, do you see these other people? Like mm-hmm. we want to be respectful of these other people, and getting to the root of what's going on and why that thing is unkind or wrong.
Because running's not wrong.
Right, exactly. But hey, let's think about the broader picture here. Mm-hmm. And then just a quick word on toddlers and preschool age children. One way that we train immediate obedience, really practical, is we get in a situation where no one is in trouble. There's no, you know, like no high stakes here. We're just hanging out at home. And we'll have our kids stand on the other side of the room, and they think it's a funny game. Daddy stands on the other side, and he'll say, you know, so-and-so, come. And then they have to say, okay, Daddy, and run to Daddy as fast as they can. And we do this like 20 times in a row. I mean, just over and over and over again. As soon as you give a request, they have to say, okay, Daddy, okay, Mommy. Mm-hmm. And then we practice putting them in another room where they can't see us. So-and-so, come. Okay, Daddy, you know, and then they have to come. Mm-hmm. And that's just like one way to just start the process. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it is like way more complicated and involved in years and years of doing mm-hmm. all those things. But if you're like, hey, what's one quick thing I can start?
Yeah.
If they're walking, they can walk to you.
Yep. And if they can say, okay, Daddy, okay, Mommy. I mean, my kids have to say that anytime that I give an instruction, they have to respond with, okay, Mommy, okay, Daddy. I mean, it's not like every time like crazy, but we do teach them, especially at that mm-hmm. 18 month, two year age when they're starting to talk. We definitely start saying, especially when it's discipline, I give the instruction and then they may not be able to repeat it all back to me, mm-hmm. but they can say, okay, Mommy, and like look me in the eye and mm-hmm. say it. And that's where I kind of know, okay, we're comprehending, we're together. And really it's like that sign of like, they want to be defiant. They don't want to look you in the eye. They don't want to, you know, agree with you. But when they're willing to make eye contact, they're willing to say, okay, Mommy, you know that like, mm-hmm. okay, I've kind of connected at that deeper heart level with them. So, and something else I would just say for, especially for those really young kids, is that, I mean, I guess I'm an advocate and maybe people won't agree with me, but I think that a lot of young children can understand no, not necessarily because like, oh, that's wrong and I might get electrocuted if I stick my finger in there, mm-hmm. but they will understand that like mom and dad don't like it when I do this, and they seem to get upset when I do this, so I'm not going to keep doing this. And so I think with young children, they can learn no, mm-hmm. and they can learn that is something that I'm not allowed to do. They can learn rules and boundaries. It looks totally different than an older child. But I think there's this element of being able to teach a young child to obey, kind of mm-hmm. like what Emily is saying of, okay, come when you're called. Obey when I say no, you stop doing that action, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. And they may not understand the full brunt. They definitely probably don't. But I think that that's something that a lot of people kind of give up on.
Yeah. And okay, a final word on this, because you guys ask about this a lot. So now that we're on a roll.
Now we're just going.
One thing too, we try to help our kids understand is why we want them to obey right away and why it matters. Again, I think this is for a little bit of an older child, but the other day I saw one of my twins was trying to slide down a banister that was really high, and I walked in, and of course the sound of my voice is roaring, no, stop. And, you know, that can sound like anger, but you know what? That is the anger of a loving mom that wants to protect them from something very harmful. And that is like our God, right? Mm-hmm. We image him by saying he wants us to have life and not death. And so he cares fiercely about us. So he does things that say, come be in my will. Mm. Come do what I'm asking you to do, because that's where there's life. Don't play over where there's death. And mm-hmm. so I think helping our kids understand, like, this is not my cry to you to be mean. This is my cry because there is, like, life and good things when you listen and you have wisdom and you obey mommy and daddy. Do you hear my voice like mm-hmm. roaring at you? It's because I care about you. Mm-hmm. You know, I care too much about you to let you do something silly, because they're not just going to learn as they get old. You know, they don't grow out of disobedience. And we've seen that. If yeah. you do not deal with it when they're young, it doesn't go away. Like, yep. you have to deal with it.
Yep, totally.
It stinks, but you got to deal with it.
Well, and that's like the whole thing, I think, with discipline is that it is hard. We were talking yeah. about how hard motherhood is. And discipline is hard. Often I will want to, like, kitchen parent. You know, I'm yes. just, like, squawking out orders from the kitchen and, like, kind of.
Hey, you stop that.
Yeah, just, like, pretending I don't really hear what's happening, you know. Uh-huh. And often I find that if I go to my children, and we have these little kitty chairs here where we're staying, and I'll sit on these chairs. My kids are standing. I will hold their hands. They have to hold each other's hands. And we all sit down and we just talk and we look at each other in the eyes and we pray and we ask God to forgive us, to help us with everything. I mean, I find that, like, mm-hmm. most of the time, not every time, but most of the time, like, they will play after that much better than if mm-hmm. I continue to just yell at them from the side yeah. or toss somebody in timeout or whatever I think mm-hmm. I'm just shooting from the hip. But if I come and be intentional to them, and often there are no consequences that happen. We're just having a discussion and mm-hmm. I'm reminding them, I'm showing them, hey, we are family. We are together. Like, God put us together. Let's work together. Let's enjoy one another. Like, those are the kind of things mm-hmm. that, again, fostering sibling relationships, all of this flows together. And I think that so much of it, mom, comes down to us being willing to sacrifice our wants and our needs and our comforts and our desires and say, this is hard and I'm exhausted and I've done this multiple times today, but I'm going to come over and I'm going to do mm-hmm. it one more time. And just know that, like, This is a lot. You know, mm-hmm. it takes consistency and effort.
But it matters, and the prayer powwow does wonders.
Ooh, the prayer powwow. I don't call it that, but I like it.
I just made that up right on the spot. Emily. I just know we do, you know, we do that. Yes, we just get together and you're like, we're going to have family heart to heart here. another question we got a lot is, how do you get intentional time with each kid during the day? What does connection with your kids look like? Do you have one-on-one time with each child each day, dates with individual kids, especially family time, et cetera, et cetera? Laura and I have pretty much the same answer for this, so I'm just going to answer it at a high level, and that's no, we don't have formal plans for getting one-on-one time with our kids, but we do, because we have family nearby, like, sometimes have opportunities come up where we have one child that gets to go to the store with us randomly, or the older siblings get taken and we have time with one child, and we try to take advantage of that. I think both Laura and I would say mm-hmm. we just look for those times.
Yeah.
And when they happen, we try to snag them for yep. 10, 15 minutes, whatever it is, or to run the errand.
And you're probably hearing a common theme from us of communication. So when we're with them and we're trying to be intentional, it's really just like asking, especially our older kids, mm-hmm. hey, how was your day at school today? Like, for my children, it might be, are you enjoying, you know, the move? Do you miss any of your friends from back home? And just taking advantage, especially car time's really good, mm-hmm. Where you might have one or like they're strapped in. They need to listen to you, you know, talking about church and how that went. But I think that that's something, as Emily said, we're just kind of taking advantage of the pockets of time that there are. And then I think for babies, that does look a little bit different. And Emily and I were both talking about this. We're like, our babies are with us, like, all the time. So I don't really have to make intentional time, yeah. I guess, for her. In fact, often for my youngest, I've often felt like, oh, man, I need to be spending more time with my older kids because I spend so much time with my youngest mm-hmm. who has special needs and needs a lot of therapies and appointments and things mm-hmm. that she's usually really not the issue. It's harder to get time, I think, with the kids as they're older.
Yeah, yeah. And I think just Laura's quick mention about the child with special needs. You know, we both have a kiddo with special needs at different ages. And I think one thing we do is, like, make therapy time special.
Yeah.
And then also, like, I still try to get one-on-one time with my son right before bed, because he can kind of get lost in the mix, even though he's got, like, different needs. Sometimes in terms of conversation, he gets mm-hmm. lost in the mix. And so it's, again, just looking for that opportunity to, okay, when am I going to pray with this specific child? Mm-hmm. Or when am I going to sing with that specific child? just looking for the opportunity and taking it. That's all we do. Right. It's not on the calendar.
Yeah. And like kind of they asked about like, do we have family games or anything like that? I think a lot of that happens on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
We'll take a family nap together. My kids love it. I mean, it takes a lot to wind down. Let's be real. But I think there's something about mom and dad being close and then us all piling together. Like we'll kind of take a nap together or attempt to, or we'll play Trouble or we'll Connect read aloud. Four, read aloud. Yeah. So we definitely are getting into that phase, yeah. I think. But in terms of anything scheduled, no, I just, but it is being intentional in the sense of keeping your eyes out on the lookout for those times.
Okay. If you've hung on till this, cause you saw it somewhere in the promo, we're getting ready to do it. Okay. The question is, how do you still enjoy sex when you're feeling used up, tired, and very unbeautiful all of the time? How do you honestly balance intimacy with your husband while being in the exhausting season of babies? How can we apply the gospel to this situation?
We actually have a blog post coming out, I think around the time of the show, that is really helpful. Emily and I have both read it and it's great. So that's something to look at. But first off, I guess, as we talk about it here, we just want you to know we're like going to give general principles. You know, it's one thing to talk with your girlfriends over a cup of coffee or a glass of wine about kind of what's going on in your life concerning intimacy. But it's a whole nother thing to talk to tens of thousands of women on a podcast and feel like,
yeah,
you know, especially about something that's so personal and intimate, sure, for all of us.
Yeah. And again, talking to such a big group of people, we know that there are just a tremendous number of complexities, everything from pornography, infidelity, being unequally yoked with your spouse, past sexual sin before marriage. Maybe some people experience literally physical pain after childbirth that impacts their ability to have physical intimacy with their husband. And so we just know whenever we come up to this topic that there's just so many different lenses, yeah, that are hearing this. And so just please take what we're going to say, which we hope is very general, knowing that this probably has lots of caveats and lots of different ways for different scenarios. And if you have deeper questions, you should always go talk to someone at your church, talk to a counselor, talk to an older couple, go talk to someone who can listen to your specific situation, because it may be more complicated than what we're sharing here.
Yes, I echo all of that. So the first thing we want to do is distill any myth that there is a perfect number of times a week to be intimate with your husband. I think especially in Christian circles, we can kind of be like, you know, wanting to know, like, if I have it three times a week, once a month, you know, twice a year, what's the number? Everybody kind of wants to know. And ultimately, everyone is really different. And husbands and wives each have different needs and desires and drives. So I think as long as you're both happy with it and you're communicating it and you actually having sex, then your number is fine. So don't stress out about a certain number of times. I've known of a few different people that have done this where they've said, okay, we want to have it this many times a week. Let's schedule it. And that was something that for them was really helpful in that season of life. And it helped them meet like their desires of what they wanted versus what their schedule looked like. So
it's a good thing for your relationship. And I think it's something that needs to be viewed as healthy. This is something that's pre-fall.
Like, yes, God created it.
Yes. So this is a good thing. It's a gift. So, and it's something we need to communicate about and say, this is husband and wife, ideally in a marriage of two believers who love God and have a generally healthy relationship. We should be wanting to lay our lives down for that other person. We want to outdo the other person in showing love. And if that's the attitude of both spouses and it's not a regular pattern for either person to be, no, 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 me, 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 I need my side, I need this, it to be this way. And both people are saying, I really want to come closer to like loving you in the way that you want to be loved. It will work out. Like you will figure out the right number. And it can just be as simple, you know, checking in those conversations of, hey, how are you feeling about this? And it can be a little awkward, but do it in a time that's low pressure. It's not time to turn on the heat. You know, it's just a normal check-in conversation to say, I want to love you in this way. How can we do better at this?
Yeah. Don't be afraid to bring it up with your husband if you feel like, oh, we're not having it enough, or, you know, this is maybe too much for me. Mm-hmm. And share with him, like, maybe there are some needs, like maybe you like to take a shower beforehand, mm-hmm. or maybe you just want to be able to think about it throughout the day. And again, like Emily's saying, like, there's an element of being able to prepare and talk about it and kind of set expectations and you guys both be on the same page, but then also being willing to set aside your expectations and be a little bit spontaneous and be willing to say, yes, this doesn't, you know, this isn't exactly what I wanted tonight, or this isn't exactly what I was thinking would happen. But I, again, I love you and I want to serve you and I want to pour out for you. And so I'm willing to do that. And there's just kind of this mix that needs to happen. It's kind of this seesaw back and forth of communicating about it and really talking about it, but then also like laying down what you want and being willing to compromise and within healthy measures again.
And I think it's important to just pray.
Yep.
Pray together for this if you are, or pray alone.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've heard that often that it can be helpful when maybe you do know that time is coming up that, you know, the night before you said, hey, honey, I'm really tired and, you know, it's just been a hard day. I'm touched out. Can we try this again tomorrow night? That you take time to pray and ask God to help you, you know, have that desire. And it's amazing, I think, sometimes what the Lord can do in helping us alongside practical things as well. But certainly don't devalue prayer as like a legitimate way to work through this issue.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, we highly recommend talking with your friends, getting vulnerable about it, meeting with an older, wiser woman than you, and being willing to talk about this. I mean, we know it's uncomfortable and hard. Like, I feel like we sound kind of uncomfortable right now. And Emily and I do talk about this. I mean, not like tons, because she's like married to my brother, but generally I'm like, okay, talking about it with her. But with that, you know, we are able to get a lot more vulnerable with friends. And so we would encourage you to be able to do that, especially if you're feeling really worn out and at the end of your rope and like you're just kind of a tired mom. Like, that's very, very normal. And we get it. And we just want you to know that, like, we hear you, you're normal. But at the same time, like, we want you to meet with others to talk about it more and not let that just be an excuse for whatever's happening.
Yeah, because just like all the other things that make a healthy marriage, this is a component of God's design for healthy marriage. And so it's important. It's not something to lay down the fight on.
That's right. Okay, so one of the other highly requested questions was, how do you shift your heart and attitude when everything and everyone annoys you? How do you reset your heart? So this is a great question and something that Emily and I are constantly feeling this, not constantly, but we do feel this way, go through seasons. And we have done shows very specifically on this. So instead of talking about it today, we do want to just point out a couple of shows, especially the Preach the Gospel to Yourself. I mean, what do we do when we need to reset our heart? We preach the gospel to ourselves. So we dove deep into that on a show, and we really encourage you to go listen to that. And then A Bad Moment Doesn't Make a Bad Day episode. That's one where, especially when you just feel like you snapped or you flipped a switch and you don't really know how to regroup from your day. That's one we pretty early in the archives.
That's an early one.
But it's helpful because I think that was something that I had to realize was it's kind of like, you know, like if you're trying to eat healthy and you're like, oh, I just messed up so much today, I'm just going to keep blowing it the rest of the day. But really any real dietitian person would say, no, you start now. Like it starts now. And so you can always reset because of the gospel, because of Christ. You are a new creation in Christ. And so you can reset and know that whenever your heart attitude is kind of stinky, you can sweeten it up by preaching the gospel to yourself. So,
all right. And we will wrap the show up with a question that we get, I think, every time we do Ask Us Anything.
Yeah.
And we definitely had it this time. And what is your daily routine like? So Laura and I can just briefly, it's hard to talk about your daily routine in a brief way. But, and it really varies because, like, I had to sit down this year and write our kids' schedule down. It was like a math equation to put it on the calendar because I had so many people in so many different places on different days. And so my kids don't have school every day. So it always depends. Is it a school morning? Is it not a school morning? I also have a child who's in therapy multiple days a week. And so it's like, is it a therapy day? That all varies. But our kids usually wake up between 6:45 and 7 a.m. Breakfast is between 7 and 7:15. We all have breakfast together usually, unless my husband had to leave early for something, but usually he's around. And it's been fun because lately I've been looking down the table. I'm like, oh, all of our kids are at the table now.
Oh, that is fun.
Yeah, so it's kind of fun because the baby is there too, and she's you know, eating her Cheerios or whatever. And so that usually wraps up. If somebody has to get out the door, it's usually by 8 o'clock. And then depending on what the day looks like, if it's a school morning, I may do some cleaning around the house, hang out with whatever kids are at home. I may do some work on Risen Motherhood, may do therapy with kids. Usually, though, around 11 to noon is like another big transition time for us. So whoever I have at home is eating lunch, and then we have to go swap kids at school. I have some kids in school in the morning, some kids in school in the afternoon. I sound like I have a billion kids.
You do have a billion kids.
Okay, so I it's too complicated. Just know I'm switching kids at school. And then whoever comes home in the afternoon, there is a nap slash rest time. So I have two kids that nap, and then my twins are at home, and they're supposed to be playing quietly. And this is like my time that I listen to podcasts, I listen to audiobooks, I clean the house, I prep dinner, I do laundry, I do Risen Motherhood. That all happens during that. It's usually about 2 hours is my mental expectation. Of course I get interrupted during that time, but that's the expectation. And then usually around 3 o'clock, that's another big transition time of everyone is home then from 3 to 5, 5:30. And I am like all hands on deck during that time usually. Sometimes my dad, who lives next door, will take a couple of the kids and we will tag team making sure we can go outside and play or go run errands or do whatever we need to do. And then we usually try to have dinner between 5:30 and 6. And bedtime is promptly at 7 p.m. for everyone in the house except mom and dad.
Nice. So what do you do after bedtime?
What do we do after kids go to bed? We clean up. So we usually have to clean the kitchen together. That is a nightly activity. And that's when my husband and I talk, honestly, and chat about our day and all the different things going on. And then we have veg time is what we call it.
Oh my goodness. You guys would.
And so my husband, you know, that's like, you know, looking on the iPad, doing whatever he's doing. And I'm literally like, sometimes I'm just sitting in my bed staring or like reading a book. And then honestly, like we watch a show pretty much every night on Netflix together. And my husband usually falls asleep, but I have to stay up to watch the whole episode.
I can't believe he falls asleep. How can that's you fall crazy. Asleep?
And so then every morning he's like, well, what happened? I'm like, ah, you fell asleep again. So anyways, it's just a fun thing, but we like it.
Nice. Okay, so for me, I'm up as early as I can be, around 5:30. My husband goes to work still pretty early, sometimes between 4:30. Between 4:30 and 5:30, he usually leaves. So I try to get up with him is kind of how it goes. And I go have my coffee, have a quiet time, usually work on RM and just get whatever I can. And sometimes the baby wakes up. She's been having a lot of like early wakes, but it's just kind of what it is. And then I was thinking about the rest of my day, and I was thinking about it as like I have all these different roles of, you know, wife and mom, of course, and then RM, writing the book, and then we're working on building and designing a house right now, which I'm surprised by how much work it was. Emily warned me, but it is a decent amount of work. And then also I kind of view therapist as a role for my daughter of just kind of meeting. Emily fills the same role for her son, but just going to all of her appointments, both medical and then also therapy type care stuff. And there's a lot that just goes in with that. So yeah, so around here, I do live with my parents right now, and so they are around and they've been a huge help. It's definitely a new thing for me. I used to be about 5 hours away from family. So this is really fun and it's really nice because they'll really help throughout the day. I have a lot of assistance now. It's like, I'm almost like overwhelmed with how much help I have. It's so great. But everyone's up around 7 and then we do breakfast. I am total opposite of M. It is like granola bars or yogurt, like cups. It's very simple. Then on to school for my oldest. I usually take all three kids with me for that kind of stuff. It goes 3 days a week. So then we usually have therapy now around 10:15, and whoever is available, like whatever kids I have, if it's all three of them, if it's two of them, they all come with me and they just play with toys at therapy or they help. Like we talk a lot about, you know, everyone contributes to the work of the home. We're a family. We all support one another. You know, our youngest needs extra help. And so we're going to all support her in that. And she comes to things for you and you go to things for her. So we talk about that a lot because sometimes they're wondering, why are we coming here again? And then I have to pick up my oldest at around, I think it's like 11:15. I should know that for sure, but it's 11:15. And then I do have childcare 7 hours a week, very consistent. Generally, I can count on it. Childcare that's mixed throughout the week. And that is usually where I try to write on the book or do larger RM projects. That's not for my parents. This is childcare that I want to count on. And mm-hmm. So my parents are wonderful, but it's, you know, they've got a lot of other grandkids and a lot of other commitments. Yeah. So it's definitely, we just needed something that was a little more reliable. And then, and a lot of times too, that will also be for like appointments for the house or medical things for my daughter. So, I make dinner every night, as I mentioned, and afternoon rest time. I feel like this is going on forever. Mm-hmm. and then my husband is usually home by 5:30 PM, which is like a massive improvement if, you've ever heard me talk about my husband's old job. And so we usually just kind of hang as a family and the kids are in bed between 7 and 8. And, we have, I guess I'm going to call it veg time where we also just kind of hang, read books, talk. Yeah. Just, it's just a pretty chill night. So
yeah,
every day is very different.
That is so true. And I feel like now there's 100 things I didn't mention, but.
Oh, you mentioned like 100 things.
I know.
I mean, me too.
Laura and I both have over 5 appointments a week of therapy of some kind or doctor's appointments for our children. And that is definitely a huge portion of life now. And I too have, I think, 7 hours of childcare. I'm like, I don't even know off the top of my head. But 5 to 7 hours of childcare every week, both to write the book.
Yeah.
And then to
outside
work
outside of like grandparents. Yeah, assistance.
Outside of just grandparent
or like
help.
Em and I help each other. We help Becca out. Like there's a lot of like, it's cool. Family, family unity.
So I'm trying to think what else. I don't think I've ever shared this before. I also have help with cleaning.
Yeah, Emmy has a house cleaner.
For those of you, I feel like people always be like, how do you guys do Risen Motherhood? I'm like, with lots of help and I don't do everything. And so that's like a real way that we have taken like legit hours out of my week of something that I don't do. I also go in and out of seasons of exercising. And right now I'm in a season of not exercising again. And then in a couple months, I may be back in a season of trying to exercise. So I think, you know, when you're hearing these things and it sounds like we're doing a lot, what we don't always share is what we're not doing.
Yeah, 100%. And there's like our hair.
Like our hair. Like how many days a week I don't shower. I actually have like a shower schedule now, I realized. And so if you see me wearing a ball cap, it's probably an off day. So
you have good hair tonight. So that's that counts for something.
Shower today. So anyways, that was probably way more than you ever wanted to know about Laura and I's schedules. And it is so much more complicated than that. And the reality probably looks different every day. But anyways, thanks for joining us for another Ask Us Anything.
Yeah, we had a lot of questions that we didn't answer, but we actually do have a blog post going up this week where we probably answered a lot of those questions in the past. So we tried to link to shows or blog posts that do have answers to some of the questions that were asked, as well as we'll probably answer a couple on social media. So we'll be looking on social media for those. And of course, if you don't know where we're at Risen Motherhood, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And of course, our show notes are at risenmotherhood.com. Go to the podcast tab and there you'll find a pretty picture of Emily and I's families that you can click on and find all of the resources, all of the links that we mentioned, all the shows. We did a ton of stuff. It will all be in that show notes post for you to be able to access any related links. So thank you so much for joining us for the special 100th episode.
Wow. Can you believe that we got to 100 episodes?
No, I never saw this coming. Like legit. Never saw it coming.
I remember the day we were like, we're just doing 5. Yeah. This is fun project.
Yeah, if you guys, some people ask, you know, why did you start Risen Motherhood or what did you start it for? Why did you do this? Good question. Check out episode 00.
So secret episode.
The secret episode. It's the very, very first one. We actually recorded about halfway through. Maybe we had the show for about a year at the time. And that one, we explained where the idea came from, kind of why we're doing this. And it just kind of helps set the stage for what Risen Motherhood is all about. So
yes. Happy 100th episode, Laura.
All right. 100th. Happy 100th to you. Oh my, we need to sign off. It's late. We're tired. We're getting real cheesy. Okay.
Oh my.
Thank you so much for joining us and we'll see you guys next week. Say kitties.
Princess.
Princess.
Kitties. Kitties. Unicorns.
Oh, good one. Say giving.
Giving.
And then now say us. Say it louder. You're doing it. You get a snack, remember?
God created everything in the whole wide world. And we praise our Lord.
The poopy.
No, okay. I will turn it off if you do potty words.
But I didn't.
Remember, this is the special.
This is the special.
Okay, let's try it one more time.
This is the special.
Okay, we're going to say it all together. Stop.
La 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 la